If your morning starts with snap, crackle, pop, and it's not your cereal, call Joint Relief Institute for fast-lasting joint pain relief. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000.
WGN. Hello there. It's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with me today. Always a pleasure to share part of my Saturday with you, and I'm grateful to you for sharing part of your Saturday with me. Lots to do on the program today and lots to talk about. We're going to be talking a little bit later about HQ trivia. If you don't know what that is, it is really, really a fascinating sign of our modern times, and we're going to be talking about that, both what it is and behind the scenes of it. And we're going to take a look at that December jobs report and take a look at some of that data. But before we go there and get into all of that, let us talk about the state of medical marijuana in Illinois. That is a topic that's coming up a lot, both as the medical marijuana portion of it and the recreational. Of course, we have sessions making a lot of conversation or starting a lot of conversation about that. And then we have it on the gubernatorial campaign trail, a lot of mention of legalizing recreational marijuana here in Illinois. So here to help us sort the hay and talk it over, Ali Marotti, business reporter from Chicago Tribune. Ali, welcome back to the program. Always a joy to have you with us.
Having me.
All right. So take us through this. Kind of what are the state of things right now in Illinois? It seems like the states, West Coast states, tend to get a little more of that conversation when we talk about recreational and medicinal marijuana in the U.S. But what's happening here in Illinois?
Yeah, there's a lot going on right now, actually, kind of just heading into the new year. Right now, the medical marijuana program here is still in its pilot phase. So product has been available to patients for about 2 years, and originally the program was supposed to expire in 2017, but they did extend it to 2020. So the operators here are in an interesting position because they've invested a lot of money here. They're doing pretty well as far as things go, but there's still a little bit of uncertainty because we don't know, they don't know whether this is going to become a permanent thing or not. And then on the sidelines, there's all this legislation that's working its way through the Illinois legislature. There's a opioid bill, which basically would allow folks who suffer from chronic pain to access medical cannabis. And basically, it would let a doctor prescribe cannabis instead of an opioid. And a lot of folks argue that, you know, with addiction to opioids being one of the state's major health problems right now, that could alleviate a lot of suffering for people and, you know, on the business side, really expand some of these businesses that we have here, because a lot of these cultivators, they have the ability to expand. You know, they have the capacity, and the licenses that they were awarded from the state allow them to get much bigger as well. And then you mentioned the recreational side a little bit, and there's also a bill that's kind of sitting in the Illinois legislature right now as well that proposes, you know, turning it legal recreationally here.
So a lot happening, and it's popping up in a lot of corners of conversation, as you note. But I want to back up to something you noted. Could you break down for us a bit of why that pilot program was extended?
Yeah, so basically Illinois was one of the first states to come to launch a program that was so highly regulated. You know, you have sort of the stigma that sits around these types of programs is, you know, your college kid who comes in with back pain and tries to get marijuana for that. But what they did when they created the program here was they made it very strict. There are originally only 39 conditions that you had to have to be approved to access medical marijuana. And pain was not one of them. And as I mentioned, it still isn't one of them. And that's the condition that expands these programs and makes these programs so large in other states. So the idea originally with the program was to expand from that 39 conditions, make sure that patients and doctors and everybody who kind of had a hand in the game could contribute to that. But there was a bill that was passed into law last summer of 2016, that extended the program and also added two conditions, PTSD and terminal illness. So we're at 41 conditions now. So that's what that bill did, and that's, you know, it extended it to kind of see, let this play out a little bit farther, see how these businesses did. As I mentioned before, these businesses here, especially the cultivators, they had to put hundreds of thousands of dollars into these programs. These are not your small mom and pop shops that they have in other states out west that you hear about or maybe have visited, you know. These are big, you know, commercial operations. I've been to a couple of these facilities, and it's amazing to see kind of the operation they have in there. So yeah, it was just sort of expanded to, you know, let it play out a little bit further, see how things go. And from what I've heard from the operators, things have been going well, and the state says so as well. You know, there haven't been any major criminal issues with these that I'm aware of, at least, and things seem to be going smoothly.
And how does Illinois compare to other states' programs?
It's much smaller. A lot of the operators expect, in any state, expect about 2 to 3% of the population to be at least eligible for the program. Illinois is at a fraction of that right now. We have about 30,000 patients. However, last month, for example, only about 18,000 walked into dispensaries and, you know, bought product. So if you think about that, it kind of seems like a lot, but this is an industry, you know, if you think about it from a business perspective, and that's not a lot of customers that are out there. So that's sort of how it compares right now. And then a lot of these cultivators and dispensary owners are saying that although the state is good to work with, you know, their understanding with any of the bugs that were worked out at the beginning of the program, things have stagnated a bit without the program expanding. That law I mentioned that passed last year that extended the program also switched up the way the conditions are added. So when this program launched, everyone sort of expected it to grow much quicker than it is. However, the director of the Department of Public Health basically is the only one who can approve program or conditions now, and he hasn't approved any. So it's, you know, I think folks are getting a little bit frustrated, especially as they see other states sort of progressing. Ohio, for example, they just broke ground on the first cultivation facility there, and that's actually an Illinois company that's doing that. It's in Yellow Springs, Ohio. In Maryland, for example, product just became available to patients back in December. So there's a lot going on nationwide in the medical arena. And some folks here say, you know, while we're moving in the right direction, it's just not fast enough.
Right. As you note in your piece at ChicagoTribune.com, which I will share later on Twitter if you follow me there. As you note in that piece, there seems to be a sense of when it is time to expand, there will be some hiccups, like perhaps the infrastructure is not there to support demand should it increase.
In a way, yes. So as I mentioned, the cultivators tell me, which they're the growers, when I keep saying cultivators, they're the ones that are growing the marijuana. They have the ability and the capacity to expand, but that can't happen overnight. You know, it takes time. They would have to hire more people. They would have to build out some of the facilities that they already have, that sort of thing. One of the folks that I spoke with, he pointed to Arizona's program as an example. It has about 150,000 patients, and about 130 of those, if I'm remembering correctly, are a part of the program because they have chronic pain. So if our program were to be expanded to include chronic pain, these operators expect there to be a huge increase. But again, that would phase in over time. The other issue that was brought up to me is with the state. The Department of Public Health runs this program, and they're the ones who approve all the applications. You know, when you're a patient, you have to apply, you have to, you know, submit your fingerprints, get a doctor to say that you have one of these conditions, that sort of thing. I spoke with a patient advocate at the Healing Clinic here, and she said that that's not happening fast enough. There's a clause in the law that expedites the application process for terminally ill patients, and she said it's still taking too long. She's seen patients die before their card even comes in the mail. So, you know, on the state side, they say that they're trying their best. They sent me some numbers. They process about 400 applications a week, plus then you have to get your card extended. You know, it's just, there's kind of a lot, and there's a lot to work through, I think.
Right, indeed. And then as you were talking with people connected to this industry, what is the sense you got or the pulse that you got on things about U.S. Attorney General Sessions moved for a bit more aggressive enforcement of marijuana laws? Was that being felt here, or is that kind of a wait and see feeling that you got from people in the industry?
It's kind of an interesting feeling here in Illinois because legally it's not going to affect the medical marijuana companies. There's an additional protection that medical marijuana companies have and people operating in that industry that basically prevents the DOJ from spending money to prosecute folks that are operating legally under state laws. And that is still in place, and that's a law. This memo that was rescinded by the DOJ earlier this week, it wasn't law, it was guidance. A previous attorney general under the Obama administration had put out this memo saying, you know, giving guidance to folks like banks and other institutions that wanted to work with this program to basically say, you know, if you're operating legally and you're not giving pot to children or criminals, we're not going to come after you. So that's what was rescinded. So the folks that I spoke with said that people that are operating in the recreational industry are probably more threatened by that immediately anyway. The folks here in the medical industry aren't too worried about it because they do have that extra protection. However, that protection does expire later this month, so Congress is going to need to extend it.
So it will be interesting to see how it all unfolds. Well, thank you so much for being with us, Ali Marati, business reporter at Chicago Tribune. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah, sure thing. Anytime.
Thanks so much. Okay, we're going to take a little break. Back in just a bit here on 720 WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with me today. Always a pleasure to share my Saturday afternoon with you. Still lots to talk about on the program today. A little bit later, we're going to be talking about that December jobs report that was just released and taking a look at some of the data contained therein and see if we can make sense of all of it and put it into context for you and talk about all that good stuff. But before we do that, our good friend Max Chafkin from Bloomberg is on the phone, regular contributor to this program, who recently wrote about HQ Trivia. It's an app that has found a way to get a ton of people to live stream a game show at the same time. It's not a particularly easy feat in a time in which we're all used to viewing things on demand on our own schedules. But nonetheless, they have done so. But behind the scenes, it is not without its a little bit of drama there. Max, welcome back to the program. Always a joy to have you.
Yeah, same here, Amy. How's it going?
Good. Happy New Year to you.
You too. HQ Trivia.
Yeah. So talk us through, in case someone's not familiar with it. It seems like you can't look anywhere on social media without seeing something about it. But if someone has been able to dodge it, take us through the basics of HQ Trivia, if you would.
Sure. Yeah. This was like the holiday phenomenon on social media. It's basically think of a quiz show like Jeopardy, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, except instead of having contestants, people who are in the studio competing against one another for cash, you have you are playing and everybody's playing, and then so basically you have hundreds of thousands of people try to answer 12 questions. You get all 12 questions right, you get a share of a prize which ranges between $2,000 and they did an $18,000 game on New Year's Eve. So you're talking, if you win, maybe you get, you know, between, I don't know, a couple of bucks all the way up to thousands of dollars if you are the only winner. And it is addictive. It's really fun. To a lot of people I spoke with for this story, it kind of looks like the future of entertainment because it's sort of like interactive television.
Indeed. And as with many startups that we have talked about on this program, there are some growing pains attached to it. So let's talk about those.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a few here, and it's pretty interesting, sort of the moment story. So I think if HQ Trivia had come along in 2016 or 2017, it probably would have already done a monster funding round at a valuation of $100 million or more. But it's 2018. We've gone through a year in which, you know, obviously the Harvey Weinstein story, as well as lots of stories coming out of Silicon Valley of basically men behaving badly. And there was a report last month about one of the co-founder of the company behaving creepy towards women. And no allegations of sexual harassment, but there was this allegation. And what's happened, which is very interesting, is this company, which is a startup, it's very, very new, is being subjected to kind of a level of vetting that I don't think we've seen before at this stage. Normally, venture capitalists would, you know, basically let startups get away with almost anything early on, and then figure they clean it up once the company matures. But basically, a bunch of investors are scrutinizing HQ Trivia, trying to see what's going on. I should say the company says that, you know, basically there's nothing here. They're committed to, you know, having a good workplace. And the company's lead investor, Lightspeed Venture Partners, did an investigation and says they didn't find anything. So it's hard to know exactly what's going on. But one thing we can say for sure is that definitely Silicon Valley is starting to get the message that certain kinds of behavior are not acceptable.
Indeed. Yeah, it seems like it is a big shift in that way. I mean, I don't think this is isolated in terms of investors starting to take a little deeper look at the personalities involved, too. It's not just what's on paper. It's not just the P&L statement. There's a lot more to it. And I think that we're at the beginning of this shift where that kind of thing will be scrutinized a lot earlier on.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing that's sort of interesting here is it's not clear. HQ Trivia is very hot right now, but you alluded to the other problem, which is technical problems. So if people tried to log on at various times over the holidays, you would have found that either there were glitches or games just failed to materialize or what have you. And the reason is that they are dealing with some kind of incredibly difficult scale issues with getting to hundreds of thousands, close to a million people watching and playing these games at the same time has proven a little bit too much for their, you know, servers, their engineers to handle, and there have been lots of problems. So that's kind of an interesting thing. You have sort of if you remember back to the kind of late 2000s with Twitter, where you had the so-called fail whale, where Twitter would fail every now and then when there was a big news day.
Right.
HQ Trivia has its own version of that, which is the lag, which is when, you know, the host Scott Rogowski, who is a, you know, very pretty charismatic, funny guy, will suddenly just freeze up and then everyone will just be sort of left hanging. They won't be able to answer questions. So you have that going on too. And so the funny thing is, like, all of this together is just causing people to talk about this thing more. And it makes you wonder. Maybe this is the future. On the other hand, it could also be just a fad.
Right. And it seems like, all of the, glitches and issues and potential behind the scenes drama aside, it does seem like kind of an interesting moment that it is able to capture the attention of so many people, as you note in the piece, in a time when we are so used to watching television on and receiving our entertainment on our own schedules, on our own time. It is interesting. I mean, I think we've talked on this program many times about how it seems like the things you have to do in order to get people to tune into live television now are of the caliber of Felix Baumgartner falling from space and, Nick Wallenda walking across the Grand Canyon and things like that. So to see something daily and episodic seems to also be pointing to yet another shift that I think we saw a little bit when suddenly we saw a lot of YouTubers being, followed and so many subscribers all of a sudden as part of their, taking a YouTube creator as part of their, daily entertainment staple.
Yeah, I mean, this gets to a real significant challenge of sort of digital media and kind of the transition from analog media to digital, which is that even though lots and lots of people are sort of watching movies and on Netflix or watching YouTube videos, they're not all watching at the same time. And that is not as good for advertising, because if you're an advertiser, you want to get everyone to show up for your movie premiere on Friday. What you really need is a big audience watching all at once. And so as a result, ad rates for online video have just been very low. They're just not where they are on television. And that's why you see these monster television deals for like the NBA and the NFL and why basically we've gone to a situation where, as you say, only these kind of mega live events, the Oscars, the Super Bowl, are able to draw the advertising dollars. And I think some people thought maybe this is just the way it's going to be, time shifting, as it's called, just going to sort of define the future of entertainment. But it does seem like people like, kind of shared experiences. And again, we don't know exactly how long term this is going to be. I mean, I think who wants to be a millionaire I think it's still around, but it had a very big moment, you know, in the 90s that then kind of fizzled out. Maybe we'll see something similar. I don't know. It kind of feels like a little bit of that 50s quiz show thing. Even mm-hmm. even the look of these shows is kind of like a retro thing, because you just have a host in a little closet. And that's partly because we're talking about a startup, but it does kind of have that I don't know, that old-timey game show feel, which is sort of fun, and maybe it's part of the appeal.
Right. Well, we will keep turning to you for the latest as this continues to unfold. I'm sure it'll be really interesting, especially once we start looking more at a longer view of numbers and users and money there attached to this.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, no doubt. All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us today. Max Chafkin, writer at Bloomberg Businessweek.
Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much. Okay, we're going to take a break here in a minute. On the other side of the news, we're going to be taking a look at the December jobs report and take a look at that data and see if we can make a little sense of it and put some of it in context for you. But before we do, Griffin, have you played HQ Trivia? Have you messed with it?
I have not, but I'm going to. I'm interested. And Bob, I know, is hard at work on the newscast, but he told me he's played it too.
Oh?
I've played it about four times.
How did it go?
I haven't won $11.30 yet. I'm so mad at myself because I got one wrong, and the answer concerned Brian Eno, the record producer. And I got it wrong, and I knew the answer. I knew the answer.
Why did you get it wrong then if you knew it?
I don't know.
He couldn't take the pressure.
It was the pressure. It was.
Choked.
And I think that host, I forget his name. He kind of
Scott Rogowski.
He kind of unnerves me a little bit. I'm not saying he's bad, but I get a little unnerved by his jitteriness.
I see.
He seems to be kind of divisive, but some people really love him.
Sure.
I've heard that, like, when he's off and they have a fill-in, people are like, oh, where's Scott?
Oh, yeah, and that's the other thing. People are constantly doing message board stuff, and they just flash by in a blur, and it's just...
Yeah.
It's a lot of...
There was an interesting thing where he was profiled by some website. Did you talk about this with... I kind of was in and out of the... I was doing other things.
I was tuning out of your show.
I was producing the show. I'm busy.
I know.
I'm busy producing. But there was a... I think Vulture did a profile of Scott, just like, oh, comedian is now host of this weird online trivia thing that no one knows what it is.
Right.
And they profiled him, and then they called one of the CEOs of the app for a comment, and he said, you can't use any of those quotes. He was very mad.
Yeah, we didn't get to that in the conversation just now with Max.
Did you see that?
But it's in the piece that Max wrote that I'm going to tweet
crazy.
Out in a little bit. Yeah, the CEO really seemed quite unhappy about the whole thing.
And it was a puff piece. He didn't say anything
right,
inflammatory
like
about the company or anything. It was so strange.
Yeah.
And then that, of course, became the story.
Sure.
Of him freaking out for no reason. And he said, if you run some of these quotes that Scott said, which were like, I like going
fairly
to
innocuous.
Sweet Green for lunch.
Right.
He was like, we don't have a promo deal with them. We'll have to fire him if you run these quotes.
No.
And it was so bizarre.
Yeah,
and it makes you wonder what is going on over there, even though they are picking up in popularity. Me and Bob were talking about it's like... you're hearing more and more about it in the past couple months. So we'll see.
That makes me want to interview him. Let's get him
definitely.
On the show.
He'd be a really interesting interview. I have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
I'll send some emails. We'll see.
All right, we'll do that. We'll make some calls. We'll text people. It'll happen. All right, it's the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Amy Guth, and we're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff, back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. You know, I often say when it's sunny and beautiful outside that I hope you're enjoying some of that sunshine, because your January and February self will thank you. I hope you soaked it in, because it's sunny and it's beautiful outside today, but it's real chilly and everyone's walking by looking kind of frozen. So I hope you get somewhere warm, and I hope you were listening from somewhere warm for sure. Well, here in a minute, we're going to be talking about the December jobs report that came out Friday from the Labor Department and showed an increase in about 150,000 jobs last month. But the figures fell short of some economists' expectations. And of course, if you follow the president on Twitter or you look absolutely anywhere, you will see that he often tweets about job increases and job reports and job numbers, things like that. Even though a lot of economists tend to say that presidents don't generally determine that much of the economy's course. Although, And also, it is a bit too early to measure how the hiring effects of the tax cut signed into law last month could have gone, right? So lots of different speculation. Everybody kind of has a narrative they're attached to, right? So lots to it. So let us talk now with the economy reporter at New York Times, Natalie Kitroff, who joins us now by phone. Hi, Natalie. Welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So talk us through this. You wrote a piece that is in yesterday's New York Times online, and I'll be sure and tweet that out after the program to everyone who follows me on Twitter. Taking a look at that December jobs report and really digging into the data of what kind of putting it in context a bit. So talk us through it a bit, if you would.
Sure. So, the number came in softer than economists' expectations. At 148,000, it was forecast to be sort of closer to 190, kind of between 190 and 198. So it was softer, but it was still a solid number. And we are looking at 87 consecutive months of job gains, which is a really kind of an unparalleled stretch. So, sure, in the kind of previous year, 2016, we grew faster. We've grown slightly slower this year, but that kind of should be expected at this point because, as I said, we're kind of at a really long period of expansion. So we should look at this year, economists told me, with kind of the sense that the economy still has some room to grow and that the showing last month, while again, maybe not up to everyone's expectations, it was still strong and a sign that workers are still in demand.
Right. And which sectors did it seem like experienced the greatest growth or the most stagnation?
Well, so retail, that's the story of the year, and it's a bad story. Retail ended up in a slump, losing 67,000 jobs year over year. So I think everybody kind of at this point understands that retail is sort of facing the threat of e-commerce. So they are not in a good place. There were some strong sectors that are maybe unlikely candidates for being darlings of this economy. The construction business had a roaring year. That generally comes with that's kind of decent paying jobs, middle skill. And we should really watch that sector as Trump and Congress kind of move on to infrastructure as potentially the next kind of big legislative challenge. Manufacturing had a surprisingly good year. This one it's a small sector of the economy overall, but it's politically important and it's symbolic. We're talking about making actual things. And manufacturing had lost jobs in 2016. And in 2017, there was a considerable gain of over 190,000 jobs. So it was a good year for a couple of blue collar sectors. The other thing people are watching is wage growth, which, I'm sure you talk a lot about here.
Right, right, certainly. And so where do we see that falling on this report?
So it was at 2.5%, which is sort of just above inflation, which is not really what you want to see. You do want to see wage growth outpacing inflation if you're a worker, because, it means you're able to purchase more and more. But there, there are signs beneath the surface. First of all, and I'm sure everyone says this when they come on your show, but these monthly jobs reports, they are revised up and down. They're not super reliable indicators. It's much more important to look at the long-term trends here. And there are other surveys and economic indicators that suggest that more widespread wage growth is around the corner. One of the pieces of evidence that we have is that in cities where unemployment has continued to drop below the national rate, which is 4.1% right now, so in places where unemployment is 3.5% or lower, you've seen accelerated wage growth way beyond that 2.5%. So we looked at, Indianapolis is one of these places where unemployment is at 3.1% in November. And wage growth year over year from the second quarter is close to 5%. So that is outpacing inflation. And, you know, there's signs that that's happening in pockets all across the country. There are signs that for the least educated workers, wage growth is going beyond 2.5% into, you know, the mid 3% range. Those folks who really do need a boost have done the best in terms of wage growth year over year. So, you know, overall, the number from December wasn't changed from the kind of last report. And, you know, economists are waiting for it to pick up. But, you know, I think we should kind of pay close attention to what happens in the coming months, especially after the tax bill has passed, and see whether we do in fact see the kind of spoils of this recovery start to spread into raises for workers more broadly.
Right, certainly. And as you note in the piece, you know, quite almost immediately, we saw the president making statements indicating he believed that the growth in manufacturing was due in part to his tax bill making this immediate impact. Of course, most economists would say way too soon to see an impact from that. What is a more realistic time frame once a bill with an economic impact passes through? What is a more reasonable amount of time to start looking at the potential impact, positively or negatively, that it may have on the economy?
Yeah, the short answer to your question, that's a good question, and the short answer is that no one will really tell you because no one wants to be wrong, right? And it is hard to attribute the sort of what happens in any facet of the economy to one specific legislative achievement, right? So one kind of problem with this is that, you know, even in a year or 2 years, it'll be hard to pinpoint exactly what had the impact. And actually, you know, with the president's comments, it's very hard to tell. If you were to look at the jobs reports over the last year and before that, you couldn't pinpoint when President Trump came to power, right? Like, it's not like things started to sort of look good when he came to power. So it's going to be hard on the tax bill. I mean, I think in the first quarter, you know, economists will probably start looking back and looking for signs of what's gone on. But again, I mean, I have to reiterate, the economy has been improving for years, and it started kind of under the last administration, under Obama's administration, and it's gone forward. And, you know, so we're seeing a tightening that's happening in these labor markets, and it's going to be hard. It will, I think, be hard to distinguish. What is it, just the economic tightening that's causing wage increases if they come? Is it a tax bill that's being passed through to workers? You know, this is probably an unsatisfying answer, but it will take several months to try to parse that. And who knows whether there will be really definitive answers.
Right, right. And I think you also hit on another really important point, that despite many competing narratives across political spectrums, it is really important to note that looking at the data in this report, we are talking about 87 consecutive months in which we have seen these numbers rise. And I think that's really important to highlight, because there are, of course, numbers that say, oh, this political change happened, this regime took power, and this happened, and this. We have the people themselves saying that, you know, of course, if you follow Trump on Twitter, he's taken credit for,
right,
you know, things
right.
like that. And I think that's really important to highlight that data, that in fact we've seen this growth for 87 consecutive months, which is important to note for sure. And then we also have, and I think this might be a little more of kind of a continuation of the answer you just gave, but I think too, we also have January 1st, a lot of minimum wage shifts happened around the country. But again, that might be another thing that might be really difficult to pinpoint as a turning point.
Yeah, it probably will be. I mean, you know, I can guarantee you that no one will get tired of studying what the impact of the minimum wage is, which, you know, so people will look to kind of parse that in the local markets in which that occurs. So, you know, economists have gotten good at looking at the minimum wage. So, you know, we will probably have some answers on that. What's really interesting is that right now you kind of have both the Democratic sort of response to wage stagnation coming into play with minimum wage going up. That's how the Democrats have sort of, that's one of the ways in which the Democrats have proposed solving this issue. And then on the Republican side, these tax cuts. So, you know, you have both experiments happening at the same time. And one last thing to say is that, you know, we are part of a global economy that is also surging. So, you know, Europe is in recovery. China's been doing better. Emerging markets are doing well. You know, that, you know, oil prices are coming back up, especially with the kind of conflict in Iran. So we're kind of being buoyed by a lot of factors that are very much beyond the president's control or Democrats in Congress or kind of anyone at home. So this is a kind of global phenomenon that we're a part of right now.
Certainly. And it's never a quick answer or an easy thing to really, you know, parse through all the stuff connected to the economy. But we appreciate you being with us today to help make sense of it. Natalie Kitroeff, economy reporter at New York Times.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. All right, we're going to take a little break. Back in just a bit here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today. I hope you are enjoying some of that sunshine outside, even though it is mighty chilly and going to get much colder later on. But I hope you are enjoying a little bit of the sunshine while we've got it, for sure. So there is a story in USA Today. I love those kind of roundup pieces that kind of look back on the year or forecast things about the year ahead. Many of them, especially I'd say this year, I don't know about you, Griffin, but this year I read a lot of those going like, oh yeah, I forgot about that. That was years ago. And it was just like six months ago.
I know.
It felt like a long time.
Remember the guy that was on, I think it was BBC or some world news.
From Crest 3D White.
Sorry. Some world news thing. And, his kids came in the room
while he was.
That was this year. And somebody reposted that. And I thought,
was it?
That seems like it was 3 years ago.
It definitely feels like 3 years
ago. It was like
ago.
Probably 6 months ago.
Oh,
but
wow.
Because somebody posted, like, this is the highlight of the year. And I tend to agree. But I was like, I cannot believe that that was in 2017.
That was a good one. I liked his follow-up interview talking about that. But
oh, I know. It all became... And that was such a weird story because people were like, oh, he's not parenting correctly.
Right. Meanwhile, his poor wife busts in there, like, with her sweatpants half down because she was, like,
that was great.
Using the toilet when she realized the kids had run into the interview. You know, like, poor woman.
That was just the whole family. I love that whole family.
And he took it with good humor. Right. He was like, I'm doing a And, I mean, that's happened, right? We've all done interviews with people who say things. I mean, I've had people say, like, okay, I have a dog who's going to be there. I'm going to try to keep him quiet and I'm going to go out to the garage so I can talk to you on the air. And you'll hear the dog, and they're like, that's okay. That's fine. It happens.
I
mean, a little bit different on TV when you have pants falling off. But nonetheless, yeah, that was a good one. Well,
so that was this year. Not one of the top business stories.
Not one of the top business stories. Again, this is from USA Today. They gathered up some of the top 10 business and technology stories of 2017. I think we've talked about all of these on the show. One of them, for sure, maybe we missed like one or two of them. Certainly when Amazon bought Whole Foods, that's their number one on this list.
Yeah.
We talked about that a couple of times, of what that would mean, what that would look like, and some of the kind of side impactfulness of it. I just made up a word.
Oh, yeah. Their number one is Amazon's empire building. And we definitely talked about Amazon in a couple different contexts. And yeah, so the purchase of Whole Foods we did. But then just generally, like, expansion, this proposed new headquarters and...
Yeah, we talked a ton about... In fact, if you made a bingo card of things said on this show, Amazon would be that square in the middle.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it kind of touches everything. And
now we got to do that.
Voice shopping with the Amazon Echo they mention here as well, so... The continued expanse of Amazon.
If you will recall, the other thing that was, I'm pretty sure also this year, I would have to check the exact date, but that was when it was a Burger King ad that aimed at your Amazon Echo or in your Google Home to prompt it to go off during the commercial.
Yes.
And that must have been this year. Caused great controversy.
Yeah, because it was messing with people's... Yeah, that was the first time we talked about the sort of creepiness of... voice-activated devices and what are they listening to.
Right.
And that was the first of many times because now it's like all I think about.
Because we, in that same conversation, I said the word seriously. I said it kind of exasperatedly. And Siri, my phone is sitting right here on the console next to me, and Siri went off during the show. Like in super meta news. Other things on this list, of course, the Me Too movement and how that touched so many industries, including the entertainment industry, but also in Silicon Valley. And that continues. I think, that's a bit of what we were talking about earlier with Max Chafkin from Bloomberg, of how we're looking at our startups with a little bit different lens right now, and scrutiny that perhaps we didn't put on our startups until they kind of got their act together. And then we expected more professionalism from them. We're asking for that sooner. We're asking for that immediately. And I think that'll be an interesting shift.
Yeah, I just saw this week Travis Kalanick selling most of his, not all of his ownership of Uber, but a lot of it. And after he stepped down, previously in the year. So, that kind of thing is taking a lot of different forms.
Certainly. Also, the iPhone, we talked about that, many, many different aspects of that, including we have talked a little bit about that battery slowdown that frustrated so many people, and the how the company copped to it and said, well, it was about preserving, battery safety. It's about that. But other people are not so convinced. And so we talked about some local people who had filed suit, in that story. So that's a
little surprised to see that at number three.
I am too. I would have not placed it there. Where would you have put it on the list?
I don't know. Somewhere closer to the bottom, I guess. But I mean, anything with Apple, I guess, is going to be a huge, huge deal, huge story. Yeah.
Right. Right. No doubt. Let's see. Stocks and the economy. Again, I think that's one of those topics that on the Wintrust Business Lunch bingo card, that's on every single episode. We can't get very far without talking about that. But Bitcoin, of course, is also on that list. And that's another story that continues. There's a lot of conversation still around that as we just kind of see the bubble that it is and how that plays out and what happens there.
Yeah, I can't tell with that one if it's a recency bias, because we were just talking like that Bitcoin moment just happened. Even now it's like I don't know, I feel like nobody's talking about it. Not that that is a measure of true importance, but in my world it came and went pretty fast.
Yeah, I think so too. Electric vehicles were on that list. And, of course, that gets into, we talked a lot about Tesla CEO Elon Musk and SpaceX this year on the show for sure. We talked a lot about retail and that shift. And we were talking about that a little bit, earlier, in the last segment about, with that jobs report, as we were looking at how retail has shifted and moved from brick and mortar locations into more e-commerce. So lots of stuff there. Again, if you follow me on Twitter, I will be sure and tweet this and other stories from the program today out so you can read them and share them and all that good stuff. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we're going to chat with Scott Catoon and find out what's happening on the Startup Showcase back in just a bit here on 720 WGN.